Hey, peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz Podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Sunday, the 5th of May, 2024. This is the review covering alternative news and events. Call +61 02 800 6198 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com, and get with the D program. Now, I'm slowly catching up with the website to get the stories that have been over the last couple of months up. So it's a very slow, laborious process because it's a one-man show. But I put up the latest one that says, "What risk? Nukem Dutton." because this is the this is what's happened to this country, where we used to have this party called the Nuclear Disarmament Party. Do you remember that one, people? I remember there was a guy called Peter Garrett that used to head it. And it was and he was the lead singer of Midnight Oil, if you remember. And then he went into politics for Labor and then he vanished. And I think he's back in Midnight Oil and sprouting whatever. But the fact is, there used to be a voice to stop this from happening in Australia, and it's vanished. It's vanished so much to the point, whereas this story is about the Liberal Party, if they get into government, bringing nuclear reactors to Australia. They reckon only little ones at this stage, miniature ones, tiny ones. But we all know what happens there. The bottom line is, we have nuclear reactors and that those sort of facilities are banned in Australia. They're banned, people. We voted many years ago, even before John Howard, way back when, that we did not want that sort of stuff in Australia. And that stopped the dumping of nuclear waste in Australia because of it. Now, we had nuclear testing way back in, and I'll see if I can get the date. And this is very dangerous because a lot of people, they're not really cued in on this. They don't realise we've already been bombed once before. I'll go to the story. Now, the story's from the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, which is called ICAN. And it's a coalition of civil society organisations in over 100 countries working for a world free of nuclear weapons. And it says they work for all nations to join and implement the United Nations Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, even though everyone's got them. And it just says that it's founded in Melbourne. ICAN was awarded the 2017 Nobel Peace Prize. So it doesn't say when this story came out, but the latest updates on it are about August 2021. So I'm assuming it's a piece put together with multiple different stories. So that, I'm just going to go through it. I think this is definitely worth talking about, simply because it shows you that most Australians don't know about this. And so the title of it is called Nuclear Testing in Australia. And it's written by many different, it says it in it. As I go through it, it'll probably say where the stories are coming from. But it's a piece with a lot of other pieces added into it. But it's definitely worth reading. It says, "When the bombs came." It says, "Australia has a complex history with nuclear weapons. All lands in Australia are traditional lands of First Nations people." So straight away you can see where this article's coming from. "Within what is known as Australia, there exist hundreds of language and cultural groups," which is true. There's about 300 dialects, people. "And the sovereignty of these nations was never ceded. It is our understanding as ICAN Australia that all nuclear projects in Australia take place on Indigenous lands." And it did. Because they never fought back. They didn't know. I mean, who would know back in those dates when Australia was still sort of had the overhand of British rule over it, even though we were supposed to be independent since 1900, on it went, where they still had the White Australia policy right up until recently. So you can see that Australia was, I wouldn't say very backward, but it was very out of touch because we were a land down under. Everyone forgot about us, but not the people testing nuclear weapons. So it says, "The Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons recognises the disproportionate impact of nuclear weapons on Indigenous communities, women and girls, and those communities affected by nuclear testing." It says, "For Australians, our nuclear story involves not only the weapons themselves, but the mining of uranium and other materials for the manufacturing of these weapons. Nuclear weapons testing and development and nuclear waste dumping." Big last three words there, people. Because the rest of the world want us to dump, they want to dump their waste here. We may not have to build the nuclear reactors and we may go under with no power because that's what's going to happen, but they want to keep digging the stuff up, okay? And they want to keep dumping the stuff here, the nuclear waste. So that's what Australia is going to become, the very unlucky country, I can tell you. So it says, Australia has been home to ancient continuous cultures for tens of thousands of years. Many of these cultures knew of problems with what we now identify as nuclear materials. Australia has been a supplier of nuclear materials to nuclear-armed states. Australia hosts US bases that could help target nuclear weapon systems. And Australia has also had a long and involved history through nuclear weapon testing and development by the United Kingdom. This article provides links to materials and background to understand some of the history of nuclear testing in Australia. There are far more stories found in the communities most directly affected, either used as testing grounds for nuclear weapons or as a downwind community impacted by those tests. This is why you don't want this stuff here, people, because it doesn't. We will be radiating for centuries if they start the testing again, which they're not going to because Australia's got it banned. But the fact is they want to dump the waste, which is just as bad. It says uranium mining began in Australia in the first years of the 20th century, but grew exponentially in the context of World War II, as nuclear weapons were being developed by British and American allies. Now, I remember going to Darwin, people, and they walk you through these World War II tunnels where they used to go through radioactive waste. It was unbelievably primitive in what it used to do, but it really brought home that a lot of people that were roped into this had no idea what they were dealing with. Really serious. So these people, these test subjects that were just out in the wilderness in Australia that were bombed on, because they virtually were, it was a test case too to see what would happen. But at the same time, they didn't know. It's a bit like coronavirus where they just say, take the jab. They just didn't know. If people are gullible, then they'll do these things and they'll get away with it. Continuing, it says Australia has over a third of the world's recoverable uranium resources. From the mid-1970s onwards, the push for more uranium mines intensified, driven by an aggressive global nuclear industry. In 2021, so that's the year the article was written. However, there are currently only two operating uranium mines in Australia. Following the closure of the long-running Ranger uranium mine project on Murrah land in the Northern Territory. And I'll just mention too, people, I've been in a small aircraft flying over the Ranger uranium mine. That was back in about 2015. So I might put some pictures up with the story, because you can just see the shots of the Ranger mine plus a mugshot. But it was a really dangerous thing because they had a million litres of radioactive slurry go into Kakadu National Park, because that's where this is. And this is dangerous. I mean, and even back then, everyone said, what's going on? I mean, I remember talking to one of the guides. These are one of the guys that take you around the parks there. And they said they have to carry a Geiger counter. That's just how bad it got. So I did that story way back then. But still, it's not really fixed. All they did is said there's nothing to see here. It's like every time there's some sort of a calamity, as soon as another story comes out, everyone, all the eyes avert and turn to that, and they can sort of keep you from thinking about what just happened. And that was nearly 10 years ago that when that happened. So I haven't done an update since, but I can imagine that Rio Tinto owned the mine, have obviously closed it down, and are probably going to clean it all up. That's what was supposed to happen back then. So probably have to do an update, people. Still, we don't want that happening here. That's why I brought it up in the first place. So continuing the story, it says, this, in part, the result of a strong community sentiment against uranium mining. It says, with social and political consent for such projects being disputed over many decades, particularly by local communities, Indigenous rights advocates and environmental organisations, of course, there are many previous and proposed uranium projects that continue to concern communities and require constant monitoring and remediation. It says, but the significance of the resistance to nuclear projects, particularly from First Nations, cannot be overstated. Now, this is a full-on article, people, about what happened before, and you need to know this because a lot of people, you don't get taught this sort of stuff in schools. Nobody wants you to know about what big corporations and countries want to do with this place. They want to, you know, get the resources, dump the waste, and this is what's been going on with Australia. We're a mining country. We've got massive resources, and the rest of the world want them. Continuing, it says, in the post-war years, having developed their first nuclear weapons, the British Prime Minister, looks like Attlee, approached Australian Prime Minister Robert Menzies seeking permission to test nuclear weapons on islands off with Western Australia. And the Prime Minister Menzies, without recourse to Parliament or his Cabinet colleagues, immediately agreed under the UK Prime Minister Churchill that the nuclear testing program began. It says the British believe that these lands were remote, empty, and far away. It says for the people of Australia, such colonialist misconceptions proved deeply harmful. So this is really what happened back then, people. And this is why, you know, you get all these things like, oh, justice for what's happened before. And there's a lot of bad things have happened in Australia. Australia was really out of the spotlight, you could say. Now it is in the spotlight, and this is what's happened. So that's why the Indigenous thing is at the forefront now, because all this stuff's come out of the woodwork, to say the least. And it's sort of like given, you know, people permission to say, well, why did this happen to us? And, you know, compensation, that's what's eventually going to come out of it. What I don't agree with is the people that are around now having to pay for what people did to them in the past and have to come out of their pockets because they weren't around then, but they're the ones that are going to get blamed. So even though they go after the government for the money, it's the taxpayers' money that's got to foot the bill. And you know what? It's not even a bad thing. I would rather do that than give $100 million to Ukraine. I mean, a lot of people might disagree with what I just said, but that's it. We have our own problems to look after, you know, than throwing money into the wind for other people's causes or whatever's. This is where we should start the healing, is here, not there, here. And we need to look at these problems that have happened in the past and understand why people do have these anger issues about what happened in the past. You've got to, this is bad what happened, people. And they want to do this again, except with our permission again, except dump it where the Aboriginal land is, because that's exactly what's happening. And unfortunately, some Indigenous people who own certain parts of land may give in to these really downgrading the Australia as it is by taking all the nuclear waste. And this has been happening for years and years, decades, where they've been trying to dump medium to high-level waste in Australia, and all the Indigenous communities have been rebuking it and stopping it. There was actually one, I think it was an ex-politician, and I'm sure it was in Western Australia. I don't have it in front of me, but his land was right in the middle of Aboriginal land, and he said, yeah, you can dump the waste here. Of course, they blocked it, but it nearly happened. So I'm saying that this is an ongoing problem, and the rest of the world wants to go nuclear. Why? Because their renewables will not work. That's why they're going to close down all the coal-fired power stations in the West. I'll make that very clear, in the West, where we cannot meet the power requirements of a modern society. It can't happen. And they know this. That's the whole point. They need to bring us down to the third world. Best way to do it, pull the digital electrical rug from under us, promise us all these renewable magic tricks that aren't going to work. And then, of course, people are now getting desperate and they want nuclear, whereas it was never an option in the past, but now it is. You see what's happened. It's a bit of a maneuvering going on. Now, continuing, it says, on the 3rd of October 1952, the first nuclear test was conducted off the Montebello Islands, traditional lands of the Nawala people. The bomb was detonated below the waterline within a Royal Navy frigate. The British named this test Hurricane. A Royal Commission inquiry into the British nuclear tests in 1985 found that fallout reached the mainland around 30 hours after the blast and spread across much of the top part of Australia. Isn't that just awful, people? You know, and there was no talking to the locals about it. It just happened, and they would have got cancers and died off. But, you know, it's all part of the nuclear, push, because they were into nuclear weapons. Everyone was trying to get ahead of the game, as it was. So continuing, it says in 1952, the British moved to the South Australian deserts for a second series of tests. These tests were conducted at Emu Field in South Australia on the lands of traditional Anangu peoples. The Totem 1 and the Totem 2 tests were detonated from towers. It says in 1956, the British returned to the Montebello Islands for a third test series. The Mosaic G1 was detonated from a tower on Trimaloo Island, and the resulting cloud rose to 21,000 feet, and radioactivity was detected on the mainland within a day. Can you believe this, people? It's just insane. It says the second test took place on Alpha Island, and that's Mosaic G2. This test was the largest test conducted by the British on Australian testing grounds, a precursor to the thermonuclear weapons they would later test on their Pacific colonies to the north. The safety committee that was established by the British and run by the Australian and British scientists to monitor nuclear programs insisted the test posed no hazard to persons, nor damaged livestock or other property, a claim that was repeated throughout the testing, but refuted by Aboriginal survivors and others from the outset. Absolutely amazing they can tell you there's no problem. They're testing nuclear weapons. It says, following the Montebello tests at Maralinga, on the traditional lands of the, looks like the Chirucha Anangu people, or Anangu people, became the testing ground for British nuclear tests from 1956. The Buffalo 1 test included live animals for the first time. Buffalo 2, Buffalo 3, and Buffalo 4 all followed. The final three tests in Australia were the Antler series. Again exploded at Maralinga. Antler 1 and Antler 2 were both tower mounted. The final test device, Antler 3, was suspended from a balloon at around 300 metres off the ground and exploded on the 9th of October 1957. With a yield of 26.6 kilotons, it was the largest nuclear test that the British conducted on the Australian mainland. The total yield of the bombs detonated across the Montebello Islands, Emu Field, and Maralinga testing grounds over the 5 years is estimated at 181 kilotons. It says fallout from each of the tests carried across vast areas of Australia and was even traced in the Pacific Islands. This is just absolutely unbelievable, people, that they got away with it. Although the testing of major nuclear weapons ceased in Australia in 1957, the British also conducted over 600 minor trials in the testing grounds between 1953 and 1963, mostly within the Maralinga testing range, though several were conducted earlier in Emu Field. These trials were essential to the further development of British nuclear weapons, designed to test various components of nuclear devices and safety mechanisms. It says some of the trials studied accidental or uncontrolled detonation of nuclear weapons. Others burned or exploded toxic and radioactive materials. These included toxic elements such as beryllium or short-lived radiological materials such as polonium-210 and lead-212 and scandium-46. It says, but highly radioactive materials such as uranium-238, uranium-235, and depleted uranium was also used. And most dangerously, around 24 kilograms of plutonium were also used, burned, blown up, and used in other experiments, spreading contamination through vast areas of the surrounding desert. Now, when you think about what was done deliberately, think about Fukushima in Japan, where it was an accident, apparently, and a tidal wave hit the plant because it was actually constructed too low, close to the waterline, which it shouldn't have been, in the 1970s, I think. And it was the US that forced the Japanese to take nuclear reactors on their land because they had that claim after World War II that they would never start another war. So Japan became a bit of a guinea pig for nuclear reactors back in the 70s. And this is a reactor that was old, the Fukushima one, and it was hit by a tidal wave. Can you believe it? From an underground earthquake, apparently. And it actually decimated it to the point where the reactor melted down. Very, very dangerous, people. And they still say it's not habitable, even though they say, oh, no, we've cleaned it up. We've got nothing to see. And yet recently they dumped all the radioactive water back into the ocean against the wishes of the Pacific Islands, who just seem to copping it from left, right and centre. So, you know, nothing's changed really when you think about it. Now, reading on, it says, before they had stopped the testing in Australia, the British had commenced further testing operations on Maldon Island in 1957. It says, after the final Antler series in Maralinga, the British tested their first megaton hydrogen bomb, the Grapple X. It says, in November 1957, on Christmas and Kiramati Island, and remember, Christmas Island is where we send all the refugees, people, more British tests took place up until 1958 on islands now recognised as the Republic of Kiribati. That's the better way to say it. Well, that other one was called Kiramati. Oh, hang on. Kiritimati. There it is. Kiritimati Island. So hard names to get your tongue around. It says, British nuclear tests in Australia raise concerns of sovereignty and democratic processes, as well as an abhorrent neglect for the safety of civilian and military personnel. The test program failed significantly to take into account and ensure the safety of Aboriginal peoples. Crippling official secrecy stymied both transparency and accountability for the impacts of nuclear tests, both in the major tests and the minor trials, for generations. And that's Dimity Hawkins that actually penned that. So what you can see here, people, is we have a place called Pine Gap in Central Australia that is an American base. And they claim that that base is on American soil. So that's what's happened to Australia. We have become a target for these so-called nuclear countries. If another nuclear war, or if not another one, let's say we haven't had the first one yet, but if a nuclear war is triggered in the Middle East or in Russia, and it starts off, we have danger all around us because we have a target in the middle of Australia, which is called Pine Gap. And if China joins the fray with Russia, the first thing they will hit will be Pine Gap and Guam. Guam is the islands near China simply because they are the, and they're also near North Korea because they're the ones that actually are the hub for the internet for the US and the Pacific. A bit like a gigantic router. I'm only kidding about that. But they're a target. So these are targets that will be hit first because they're communications, and that's what they go for first. They knock out communications. So we've made ourselves a target, a nuclear target, simply because of an American base in the middle of Australia. But that's another story for another day. It says, reading on in this story, in total, an estimated 17,023 Australians are recognised as having taken part in the nuclear tests, with approximately 52% civilians and 48% classified as military personnel. Australian military personnel alone included 3,235 Navy, 1,658 Army, and 3,223 Air Force. In addition, a nominal roll of test participants compiled in 2001 included 8,907 civilians, including 10 Aboriginal people. Far more were impacted by the tests, however, and many continue to seek recognition for the harms caused. Very serious stuff, people. It says the health and environmental damage to Australia from the British nuclear testing is a matter of ongoing concern. And it says, and the picture I put up with the story on conspiracyoz.com, you see a gentleman standing next to a sign that says former Maralinga nuclear test site. And so it says here, we were innocent, lambs to the slaughter, and have been treated with contempt by the Australian governments of both political persuasions, trying to sweep their tarnished history under the carpet. We have suffered. For many of our friends, life was cruelly taken away or changed forever by an unseen and largely unknown foe, ionising radiation. That's from Avon Hudson, nuclear veteran and whistleblower. This is it. And it says, the Treaty on a Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons provides the only internationally agreed framework for all nations to verifiably eliminate nuclear weapons. Along with banning nuclear weapons and the infrastructure that supports it, the treaty seeks to offer assistance to victims of nuclear weapons use and testing, as well as environmental remediation in places where these weapons have been used. The bitter legacy of nuclear testing across Australia and the Pacific region should spur our government to join the new global effort. So that was written by Dimity Hawkins AM, an ICANN co-founder, with material drawn from her in-depth paper, Australia, Ongoing Humanitarian, Human Rights and Environmental Concerns at Montebello, Emu Field and the Maralinga test nuclear test sites. So there you go, people. Then we got our sense about us and stopped doing it here. So what the problem is now in 2024 is they want to dump the nuclear waste in Australia internationally. They want to get all the countries around the world to go, hey, let's go nuclear. Renewables aren't going to work. Let's go. And you've got people like Bill Gates running around in Australia with his TerraPower, which is a company that he formed to build a nuclear reactor. So these are like the mini ones that haven't been used yet. But he wants to go and do one in Wyoming in the US, and then he wants to start the ball rolling. This is a guy that wants complete power, literally, when you think about it. He's like a Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. He just wants to own reactors everywhere and sit back and watch it rake in. But there's going to be problems, people. You can't just do nuclear reactors and expect no problems, because what's going to happen is they will actually grow exponentially. You'll have more and more countries wanting to do it because it's an easy way out. Now, Australia is not going to be against it because they have uranium, okay? And I've done this story years ago where you could use thorium for the same thing, and we have thorium in Australia as well. Thorium is an alternative to uranium. You can't make weapons from it, okay? That's the point of it. So this is the problem, is that in the 1940s, as they were developing these atomic weapons, they went uranium. Why? For obvious reasons, because they wanted to make a weapon out of it. And it has continued up until this day. But really, if you want to clean up the planet, you don't go down the uranium road. You go the thorium road. Now, it's much more expensive, which is why no one wants to do it. And this has always been the problem. Here we are trying to, supposedly save the planet from global warming, where most of the hot air is coming from governments and corporations that just want to make a buck. Okay? They want control, less people, and they want to make a buck as they're doing it. And this is it. That's the global agenda. Until people actually really understand it, they're going to be hoodwinked all the way down and funneled towards the great cull, because they're not going to get it. They're going to think they're doing the right thing, but they're actually a jigsaw piece in a very wide puzzle, and the puzzle equals NWO, okay? And when they get their way, they don't need that jigsaw piece anymore, and it goes. Very simple, people. So the second story I put up regards to it is called Nuclear Power in Australia, a Silver Bullet or White Elephant? 16th of March, 2024, abc.net.au. It says the coalition claim is that nuclear energy should join the mix of power source generating energy in the national electricity market. It says the workings of that market are fiendishly complicated, but the broad strokes are simple. For a long time, most of our electricity has come from coal with gas as a backup. But now we are transitioning away from coal. I wonder why. The main reason for that is obvious one, to reduce emissions and meet our climate targets set by the overlords. I didn't say that part, I added it in. Peter Dutton also flagged early enthusiasm, although at first only in principle. Then, shortly after the Dunkley by-election loss a fortnight ago, he confirmed this would become official coalition policy. And it says an announcement is expected before the budget, which Mr. Dutton has hinted will include a list of possible sites for nuclear, likely large-scale nuclear. Good on you, Dutton. So that's why I put the headline in, that you can see what risk. Nukem, Dutton. Now, these are excerpts from the story. It's not the full story. I didn't want to do the full story, so I sort of break it down so you get an overall picture of what the story's about. Now, the next story is Nations Science Agency CSIRO hits back at Dutton's claim that nuclear power costings were discredited. So CSIRO, which is actually funded by Bill Gates, surprisingly, actually said that nuclear power in Australia was too expensive. And which it's actually true. It is too expensive. That's why no one wants to do it. And the moment it's affordable, everyone's going to do it. They won't care what the repercussions are. They'll just do it because it doesn't hurt the hip pocket. At the moment, it does. So Dutton claimed that the CSIRO were wrong and that it's actually affordable, because he was saying that the cost of doing it the other way with renewables was just as expensive. That's the comparison, which is sort of true in a sense, but I'm looking at it from the lithium angle, from the electrification that the globalists want through control, because then they can survey everything through the Internet of Things and they'll have the power to do it, literally. I'm saying that pulling lithium out of the ground is the same as coal, which it is. So that's the comparison from my angle. Dutton's angle is about all the components that go into making renewables, like the solar panels and the waste and all that sort of stuff, which is also a claim as well. But at the same time, it can't meet the megawatts that you need to power a modern society. It won't happen. Continuing on, it says, Mr. Dutton has been advocating introducing nuclear power to Australia's energy grid as a way to provide a reliable supply of electricity quickly and at reasonable costs. The opposition is pushing for the development of small modular nuclear reactors across Australia. These are the ones that Gates wants to push, people, the TerraPower one. That's why he was here a while back talking to Albanese, and I'll see if I can find some of those stories. It says, and more recently for large nuclear reactors to be built on the sites of closing coal-fired power stations. So there you go. We're going straight down the road from when we banned all this stuff after all the testing and all that. We've gone a complete about face, as usual. So it says on the next story, and by the way, that story came out abc.net.au on the 15th of March, 2024. So I'm going back in time as I read the stories. The next one is the 15th of March, 2024, theclimatecouncil.org.au. Nuclear power stations are not appropriate for Australia and never will be. It says the prospect of nuclear power in Australia has been a topic of public debate since the 1950s, which is true. While Australia has never had a nuclear power station, we do have 33% of the world's uranium deposits, and we are the world's third largest producer of it. Periodically, as with the changing of the seasons, various individuals appear in the media singing the virtues of nuclear energy, claiming it is the only option for clean and reliable electricity in Australia. It says, in fact, over the one-third of Australia's electricity is already powered by renewables. It says, the new initiatives like the Capacity Investment Scheme are set to push us towards 82% renewable energy by the end of this decade, which is a bit of hogwash, people, because energy like demand increases over time. It doesn't stay the same. So their 82% means nothing if it's not meeting 100% of people's electricity. It says, while the move to clean energy is still not happening fast enough, thank you very much, it is underway and starting to speed up. That's just what they're saying in the article, people. We do not need distractions like nuclear to derail our progress now. So let's set the record straight. So they're going to close down every coal-fired power station as quick as they can. So we've got even quicker than they can build the renewables. That's what's happening. The only reason nuclear is even a debate is because of that. So the people like this that say, oh, renewables are speeding up, is just fallacy. Okay, it needs to have already sped up, not speeding up. So here's the reasons of why nuclear power make sense for Australia. It says, nuclear power stations can't be built anywhere in Australia. They are banned in every state and in every territory. Such bans were introduced because of community concerns about the health and environmental risks. Many parliamentary inquiries at a federal and state level, and it says, see the Victorian inquiry, this federal inquiry and this South Australian inquiry, all have links, for instance, have been held into nuclear energy, and all have concluded that it makes no sense in Australia. Now, you've got to remember when these inquiries were written. So I'm going to go to the first one and see what date they came out. How convenient, people. I didn't even check those links, but I go to the link and it says page not found. And it says, on the 1st of June, 2022, we published a new website with this change. So you have to go back to the, let's see if I can find it. go back to our homepage. So it's going to go back to the actual Parliament of Victoria homepage, and I can't find that article. So there you go. Anyway, that link's broken. So I dare say the other link is probably broken as well. This is the Federal Inquiry. Clicking on it, and it says 404 page not found. There seems to be a problem finding the page. I just realised these links are broken. I should have checked them, but I didn't. And now you've got the South Australian Inquiry. We're having trouble finding that site. So I'm going to take those links down now because I realise they don't work. But at the same time, we needed to see when those articles were written to see how long ago those inquiries were. So I may have to leave that for another day. Anyway, so I'm just going to go into the article now and just kill those links, and we'll see if we can find them on another time, because I didn't want to get clogged down on this full debate on nuclear energy, but I do want to make sure that people are aware that this is a problem that's definitely 100% coming. And it'll be in your backyard soon. If you're somewhere in South Australia and Western Australia, they're going to be the target areas to start with. And I think Western Australia has just fallen under the hammer to take medium nuclear waste, which is very, very sad. They're starting off with low emission nuclear waste, but it will move into medium and then high. That's what they want to do. They've actually said that, so it's part of the plan anyway. And if they don't get any opposition to this, people, they will just do it. Okay, it will just happen. Anyway, so we couldn't do the links there, but I'll just move through into the next one. So it says, number two, nuclear power stations are expensive and take too long to build. And it says Australia's Independent Science Information Agency, the CSIRO, has found that solar and wind are by far the cheapest ways of producing electricity, even when factoring in storage. It says, in contrast, the cost of building and operating nuclear in Australia remains prohibitively high. Now, I'm just going to check those links, people, to see if they all work. One sec. And actually, that link actually works. And it goes to the csiro.au, and it says the 20 to 23 to 24 Gen Cost Consultation Draft released. And it's got the draft considers inputs sourced on real-time engineering construction cost data points in Australia as well as overseas parallels, information from equipment manufacturers, software, and literature. Key points in the current draft are pre-2030 integration costs now included, variable renewables still found to have the lowest cost range of any new built technology, inflation impacts easing, large-scale solar falls, and pressure remains on gas, onshore wind, and nuclear, SMRs. So that's the small modular reactors. So they factored them all in. And looking at the chart myself, it's got wind onshore as 35%, so it's quite high. But it has nuclear small modular reactors at 39%. Black coal's at 24%. Now, you don't want to use it, people. and they've got large-scale solar is minus 8%. Wind onshore is 35%. So I'm just going to read this chart again. Oh, that's the dates. Okay, so in 2023 to 24, nuclear was 39% costs. Now it's, and it used to be 19%. So it was actually cheaper the year before, but now they've done the forecast, it's more expensive. Then you've got large-scale battery use, and they've got in 23 it was 20% cost, now it's only 2%. Wind onshore last year was 35%, but now it's only 8%. Large-scale solar is 9% last year, now it's minus 8%. So you can see that's far cheaper to do all those. And it says gas combined cycle, roughly the same, people. Last year 13%, this year 14%. So it's sort of like the safe alternative. Of course, black coal, 24% last year, and now it's minus 3% this year because they're closing them all down. So the costs for them are disappearing because of the costs that they incur. So it's worth checking out that link, people, that was in the story where it says remains prohibitively high. That's the link to the story I just read, which is in that main story I put up under the headline, nuclear power stations are expensive and take too long to build. And that sort of goes in the face of what Dutton is saying. So it seems that Dutton knows something we don't, but who knows? Maybe there's a big bag of gold from Gates. Who knows? We don't know. We'll never know. But the fact is, it is more expensive at this stage. It says analysis conducted by the nuclear industry itself shows nuclear power stations take an average of 9.4 years to build, compared to 1.3 years for a major wind or solar project. It says Australia needs to replace its aging coal-fired power stations as quickly as possible to rapidly reduce emissions this decade. Ridiculous. As shown in the Australian Energy Market Operator's Integrated System Plan. By far the cheapest and quickest way to do this is to ramp up renewable energy compared with storage like pumped hydro and batteries. That's a pipe dream, people. We'll have to fall back on nuclear simply because we won't have enough energy because we've closed all our coal-fired power stations. That's exactly what's going to happen, people. So Dutton is just looking at the easy alternative to keep himself in power, literally, once this occurs. Now, they're saying it takes 9.4 years to build a nuclear reactor. Now, they're big ones. These little ones, apparently, that Gates has aren't as costly or take as long to build, but they've never been done. So you've got Mr. The Gatekeeper trying to force his power control over everybody by trying to convince you that they're smaller and less of a problem. So the third point, it says nuclear power poses significant community, environmental, health and economic risks. It says radiation from major nuclear disasters such as Chernobyl in 1986 and Fukushima in 2011 have impacted hundreds of thousands of people and contaminated vast areas that take decades to clean up. Even when a nuclear power station operates as intended, it creates a long-term and prohibitively expensive legacy of site remediation, fuel processing, and radioactive waste storage. Funny, the last three words probably are glowing with Australia in the headlines. Number four, nuclear power is not renewable and it is not safe. It says uranium is a finite resource just like coal, oil and gas. Well, so is lithium. I mean, these people. It needs to be mined, and just like mining coal, oil and gas, and they should have put lithium in brackets, this carries serious safety concerns, including contaminating the environment with radioactive dust, radon gas, waterborne toxins and increased levels of background radiation. On the other hand, energy generated from the sun and wind releases no pollutants, got it right, into the air and is overwhelmingly considered to be safe. If you could build enough of that stuff, it would work. The problem is the sun doesn't always shine and the wind doesn't always blow. This is the big problem with that. And they won't look at it because Australia is okay with all that sort of stuff. But you try to go to Northern Europe and convince them of this and you'll find the same problems, okay? Even though there are some Scandinavian countries that are right into nuclear, I understand, the fact remains that the more power stations you build, the more probability of an accident is generated. Also, the waste increases. This is the big deal. And just for the record, they do have nuclear reactors in Sweden, Finland. Okay, because I've just looked it up just quickly, stopped the podcast and kind of quick look to see who has the reactors. But what it does say, and I did need to know this, nuclear power currently represents approximately 30% of Sweden's national power supplies. And it says there are three nuclear power plants in the country with a total of six reactors in operation. So that's in Sweden, but notice it's only 30%. And it says here, Sweden bought 12 reactors online between 1970 and 1985. Eight remained in operation in 2019. Finland built four between 1977 and 1980. A fifth was approved by Parliament in 2002. Not scheduled to go into operation until 2020. So you can understand that these countries still don't have 100% nuclear power. Okay, they still have oil, gas, and batteries. Everyone still does the same thing. So with nuclear power in Sweden, it's not solar power. You see, they're not going to get their solar power because of the sun. Okay, so Australia is looked upon as the battery capital because we can do the solar panels. Some of these other countries can't. We don't need nuclear power. This is the thing. The fact is they're going to do it because they're pulling so much of the rug out of under the coal-fired power station, we're going to have no power in the short term. And the globalists don't want us to have nuclear power either. Even though Gates is trying to sell it here, he knows he won't get away with it. The fact is, they want this country to go under, become a service economy and a dumping ground for nuclear waste. That's the goal. Now, continuing on in the story, it says, this is the part that says, number four, nuclear power is not renewable and it is not safe. It says, on the other hand, energy generated from the sun and wind releases no pollutants into the air and is overwhelmingly considered to be safe. What is a nuclear power station? It says, nuclear power stations run on uranium. When a uranium atom is split inside a reactor, heat and radiation is produced. This process is called nuclear fission. The heat produced from this process is used to create steam from water. The steam drives a turbine that powers a generator. The generator creates electricity. Unlike coal and gas, no greenhouse gas pollution is created in the operation of a nuclear reactor. However, all other steps involved in producing nuclear power, from mining to construction, decommissioning and waste management, result in greenhouse gas pollution. So you can see that Dutton, even though the Liberal Party may not believe in getting to 2050 or 2030 for the World Economic Forum's meet the targets, the climate emission targets reduction, he's thinking if he gets nuclear reactors, he doesn't have that problem, so he stays in power. That's a Freudian slip, but you get it. That would be his motivation, and only his. Unless there's some backdoor deal. So it says, to finish it up, it says, small modular reactors are nuclear reactors with a small capacity of 300 megawatts or less and modular in the way reactor components are produced. It says, based upon these definitions, no small nuclear reactors have ever been built. Now, 300 megawatts, people, I'm telling you now, one of our big coal-fired power stations, got it right, is around 1,000 to 1,500 megawatts. They're the ones they're getting rid of. And now they want to replace them with these tiny little things, which have a similar strength to wind and power anyway. They're only around that sort of megawatts too. So you can see that this is not going to work. The fact that they've never even built them. So reading on, I've attached another story that says, nuclear energy, Bill Gates. TerraPower aims to build the first US next generation plant. These are the small modular reactors. This is on March 19, 2024, the Australian Financial Review.com. It says, New York, TerraPower, a company founded by Bill Gates, says it plans to start building the first of a new generation of nuclear power plants in the US in June, joining a race with Russian and Chinese rivals to develop and export lower-cost reactors. Chris Levensky, I think that's how you pronounce it, TerraPower's chief executive, told the Financial Times the company would apply for a construction permit from the US regulators this month for its reactor, which is cooled with liquid sodium rather than water. Never been built. TerraPower, now this is about the company that Gates put together, a nuclear innovation company. TerraPower was founded by Bill Gates and a group of like-minded elitists, now it says visionaries, that decided the private sector needed to be controlled, doesn't say that, it says to take action in developing advanced nuclear energy to meet the growing electricity needs of the elites, doesn't say that either. Mitigate climate change, does say that, and lift billions out of poverty, question mark. No, I put the question mark there. And then the next article. It says, that's how you know what TerraPower is. And I just realized I haven't put the link. Just looking at it now. Oh, there it is. Yeah, I have. So it's got Coalition's plan to go nuclear puts five regions on the table as favored locations for nuclear reactors. Are you ready to find out if you're going to be the lucky one, people? And this came out in abc.net.au on the 5th of March, 2024. Opposition leader Peter Dutton says he will be upfront with voters about where the coalition is looking to place potential nuclear reactors when the party announces its policy in coming weeks. You can bet they're going to be in Labor areas, almost for sure. Speaking on Channel 7 on Tuesday morning, Mr. Dutton confirmed the party was interested in replacing retiring coal plants with nuclear because the sites come ready with poles and wires to distribute power. Well, there's a thought. If there's a retiring coal asset, I'm not going to try and be Voldemort, but I'll just say it as I see it. So there's a coal-fired generator that's already got an existing distribution network. The wires and poles are already there to distribute the energy across the network into homes and businesses. That's really what we're interested in, Mr. Dutton said. Really? It sounds more like he can cut the emissions real quick and win. Win the race, beat Labor and do the finger at them. But really, is that the answer, people? To close all the coal-fired power stations that already meet the megawatts and only just, and then get rid of them, all of them, while China continues to build thousands like that? It just shows how stupid we are. I mean, who is really going to win this race? Liberal or Labor? Nah, the Liberal Party won't win, people. They're just minions doing their bidding of the bigger players like China, US, and the globalists all together. So it says, proposal to build nuclear power plants at former coal sites in Latrobe Valley draws criticism. So already they have given away the cat's out of the bag because they've already said they're going to try and do these reactors where they've closed the big coal-fired power station. So you can already see where this is going to happen. So the first one they went for, and this is abc.net.au, 26 February 2024, for the past century, Victoria's Latrobe Valley has drawn its identity from being the home of the state's coal-fired electricity sector. It says, but it's now being touted as the potential home for an Australian nuclear industry by the federal coalition. Nuclear power generation has been put forward as a zero-emission solution, see, despite being banned by the coalition in 1998. Nah, times have changed. For the group's president, Wendy Farmer, it was the beginning of a new chapter advocating for the health of her community. She said the community would not support nuclear power. Well, of course not. It's if that goes up, you go up with it. If a coal-fired power station goes up, that just goes up. But nothing else happens apart from the fallout of the coal dust everywhere. But fallout from a nuclear reactor, you're not going anywhere real soon. So it says, or she says, it's just like, let's make it a dumping ground. It's an industrial area. The people there don't matter anymore, Miss Farmer said. There would need to be really strong community support for nuclear power, and there isn't. So here we go. They're going to move it around until they find a Labor electorate and try and dump it there, and they're going to get the finger, and they're going to have to move on. And we know where it's going to end up, people. In the backyard of an indigenous, unsuspecting tribe. That's what's going to happen. Miss Farmer told the ABC, or maybe suspecting they might want to take the money and run. Miss Farmer told the ABC the delay in Victoria's transition to renewable energy was contributing to scepticism about future power generation and the phase out of coal-fired power stations. The issue we have is federal and state arguing against each other, and we're not pushing fast enough to get the renewables into the grid, she said. That's because it's not meant to happen, lady. Look at offshore wind. How long we're waiting, people say. We're having a shortage of power because renewables aren't doing their job. It's meant to be like that, lady. It's supposed to go like that. Now, what I've done is I've thrown in a whole bunch of links, people. I'm not sure if I'm going to go through them all because I didn't want to spend too much time on this story. It's got Australia's ban on nuclear is political, and that's Bill Gates. So let's just read a tiny bit of Bill Gates because I do want to know what he thought when he came here and saw Albanese. So this is from the AustralianFinancialReview.com, and it came out on the 24th of January, 2023. And I just realised it's a what they call a subscription-based article, and they will not let me read it all. So I'm just going to read one paragraph and try and find it somewhere else. It says, technology billionaire, philanthropist and climate advocate Bill Gates, what a great guy, says a lack of political support means Australia will have to sit out the next 15 years of development in nuclear energy. Oh, boo-hoo, Bill. Despite his view that is essential to global aims of decarbonising power grids. He's got a vested interest. He's pushing his nuclear reactor. That is a conflict of interest. Bingo. I don't even need to read the rest of the article because you can already see he's actually just jumped the gun, people. So I'll just go quickly through the links because I haven't put any paragraphs on them. I've just left links up. So you're going to have to read the headline and see if you want to go with that link. So it says, both you and Dutton have quoted Bill Gates in support of nuclear. So I think this is the X one, the Twitter one. It is. So Rachel Withers, whoever that is, 7:30 report probably. Both you and Dutton have quoted Bill Gates in support of nuclear. And it's got a fellow called Ted that says yes. And then the 7:30 report, Bill Gates says Australia doesn't need to get engaged on this. Australia should aggressively take advantage of its natural endowments, solar and wind. This is back in March, people, so fairly recent. Ted, here's what I love about Bill Gates. And then they've actually got a story here where it seems like this is the interview. So it's got interviews with Ted O'Brien, Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy, about the coalition's push for nuclear energy. So obviously it's going to be him backing up Gates. So straight away you can see that the powers that be, the government, are supporting Mr. Gates and his quest to turn us into a yellow cake dumping ground for the international nuclear waste. So it says here, next headline, green tech opportunity phenomenal in Australia, Bill Gates. And this is from Innovation, AUS.com. And it came out on the 24th of January, 2023. So obviously when Gates was here. It says, Microsoft co-founder was surprised by the former coalition's government lack of climate commitments, despite the economic advantages that the energy transition presents to Australia. The world's seventh wealthiest individual, and that was back in January 23, addressed the Lowy Institute on Tuesday, stating, Australia was fairly unique, I'm not doing the voice, until quite recently at not having a climate commitment, which was a little bit surprising, given its large mineral reserves and potential to onshore iron ore processing. Land area per person in Australia was described by Mr. Gates as quite phenomenal. This is the biggest farm land owner in the US is Bill Gates, people, by the way. For the development of wind and solar energy farms, and he owns all the farms on the waters like of the Mississippi and that, where he can actually claim water energy as well. Funny that. I'll get into that later. It says, under the coalition government, an emissions reduction target of 26 to 28% on the 2005 levels by 2030 was introduced in 2016, but never legislated. Well, good. This has since been increased to 43% and legislated under the Albanese government. There you go, people. Mr. Gates said, it's great to have Australia on board on climate. No, we're not on board. It's just Albanese. And argue that the world isn't going to trade with people who don't have serious climate commitments. So here you go. That is a globalist opinion. And he is threatening countries that if you don't jump on his bandwagon, he's not going to trade with you. And he's going to talk to all the other trading partners to not trade with you. What do you call that? That's called a controlled sort of economic stranglehold that Gates and his mates want to control the world. Seriously. He's doing food. He's doing water. He's doing the air. He wants to control everything you do. And this is what it's all about. So it says, this is him. I'm not doing the voice. Australia is amazing when it comes to agricultural innovation. This is from the biggest farm landowner in the US. And he's not farming cows or anything, people. No, he's just owning the land. So that's interesting, isn't it? It's almost like starving them out if he buys more of it. So it says, Australia is amazing when it comes to agricultural innovation, particularly in tropical and dry land agriculture, which plays an important role in helping farmers deal with climate change and achieve greater productivity, according to Mr. Gates. Productivity? He's trying to close them all down by buying them all out. That's ridiculous. So it says, and then he wants you to eat lab-grown meat. Get it, people. Start to get it. So it says, he notes that his foundation has sponsored Australian research programs and collaborated with Australian government organisations. This includes more than $22 million in commitments to the CSIRO since 2011 to support agricultural development and nutrition research. And this is a guy that's trying to save India and Africa from starving to death, and they're still starving to death. So all you're doing is propping the guy up. I remember seeing when he went to India once, and they had this gigantic sort of like 40-foot effigy of Bill Gates' head, and this whole bunch of school kids were holding this giant cardboard cutout of his head up while they worshipped him as he walked towards them. I couldn't believe how stupid people are, but that's what they believe. They think the guy is helping them, and he's laughing at them because he's actually into depopulation. He wants to get rid of them, not make them populate. So it says, on Monday, Breakthrough Energy Ventures, which was founded by Mr. Gates, and this is the TerraPower, they're all under this thing, made its first investment in an Australian-based Rumen 8, the Western Australian methane-reducing feedstock company in the VC firm's 103rd investment. So there it is. It says the Western Australian Methane Reducing Feedstock Company. So that's when there's less methane, what does that mean, people? It means less cows, because that's how they get reduce it. So it says Mr. Gates also praised the ongoing work of the federal government's Clean Energy Finance Corporation in helping to mature, this is climate change mitigation and adaption, technologies, and get the green premiums down to zero. What happens when we get to zero? Are they going to then dictate what everyone does from birth to death? And if you step out of sight of that grid, off you go to the funny farm. This is what happens when you get to it, people, because then you're going to realize there was never a need for it. We were not getting global warming. The Earth was changing naturally through the sun and the universe influence, not Bill Gates and his hot air mates, because that's what they want you to believe, so that they get control of you. That's the whole point. So it says, Mr. Gates also praised the ongoing work. I've already read that. He similarly acknowledged Australia's decision to not participate in the development of nuclear energy technology, even though he was air hawking for his TerraPower. What a liar. What a two-faced liar. Despite his own investment in four of the world's... I didn't know about this, people. Despite his own investment in four of the world's 14 nuclear fission companies, and as a primary investor in TerraPower. What a great name, isn't it? TerraPower, a nuclear fission energy company. I didn't know he had investments in four of the world's 14 nuclear fission companies. He is 100% pushing nuclear. And by saying, oh, let Australia go, he knows we're going to be a dumping ground for all his nuclear reactors and their waste. That's what he wants. He just wants us as a dumping ground. So it says, continuing, and I'm not going to do the voice, I think the idea that Australia is watching other countries and saying, okay, over the next 15 years, show us. You make us something that's safe and cheap, and you deal with the waste and all those things. It's a very good attitude, Mr. Gates says. I like how he puts in with the waste and all those things. So he's got some countries have opted to be part of the next 15 to 20 years. I don't know if it will be a success. I put billions of dollars into it. So I must think there's some chance of succeeding there. So this is him telling you that if he's doing it, you should do it. He says it would help solve climate and low-cost energy for poor countries. like he really cares about poor countries. I mean, please. His father was a eugenicist, okay? Hung out with the World Bank and Rockefellers. Please. Guy is not a poor kid off the block that just created Microsoft. No. Oodles of cash coming out of left, right, and center. And it says, while believing in the viability of nuclear energy, Mr. Gates notes that it must be part of a larger energy mix, which would include carbon capture, and sequestration, I think. I can't say it. SEQUESTRATION. So sequestration. Now, I don't know if that's right, people. If you said the same word as me, then maybe we're both right. And it says, and at about 60 to 70% capacity from renewables. He wants 60 to 70%. Sweden is only at 30%, okay? And they've had them since the 70s. So what's going on here, okay? This is how you know there's something wrong, people. When countries that already agree to use it haven't utilized it fully, okay? So there you go. So this guy is touting figures which are not reachable, and he's doing it on purpose because he doesn't want you to reach that. That's the whole point. Okay, they want to kill coal and give you the smatterings of nuclear so they can control your energy and monitor you, because it's all going to go through the Internet of Things. This is what this is all about. It's control. It's not just about the power trip. It's about controlling the power trip. Now, the next link says, and it's from skynews.com.au, Anthony Albanese hosts Bill Gates at the Kirribilli House for discussions on climate change and global health issues. Really? More or less, he would have been telling him, go nuclear. See, they don't want to. But that's what he would have been saying. You want to reduce your climate change? Go nuclear. This came out on January the 21st, 2023. So that must have been when Gates was here. And it says here, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has hosted Bill Gates and representatives from his company Breakthrough Energy and members from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They're all coming down on him, people. It is the first time the pair have met, and they are expected to discuss responses to energy shortages, medical issues, that'd be COVID, and climate change. All the fingers in the pies, eh? Mr. Albanese thanked the Microsoft founder for his contribution to global health research and explained his government's approach to climate change. We haven't met before. I'm not going to do that voice either. But I've admired, just think of Albanese as the poor man's Bob Hawke. You know, he's the same, except nowhere near it. He's just the poor man's version. It says, we haven't met before, but I've admired your work and your contribution, not just financially, but in raising debates, including the need to deal with health issues, he said on Saturday. That's Dr. Bill, isn't it? It says, we've just been through the pandemic, but we need to prepare for future health challenges. How about another pandemic, Anthony? And the work that's been done on eradicating malaria and other diseases in our region. He's going on about malaria. They haven't eradicated it yet. It says, and of course, climate change. My government was elected on a platform of taking climate change seriously. We've introduced the first legislated caps on 43% by 2030, which is only like 6 years away, people, and net zero by 2050. The billionaire thanked the Prime Minister for the welcome and said he was looking forward to working with the government, or getting the government to work for him. We've had a great partnership on global health, Gavi. Polio, thanks for your increase in the global fund, Mr. Gates says. Because that's Australia donates to it, people. We spend our tax dollars and give it to Gates. A lot to do there, as you say. The preparedness for the next pandemic is still a discussion that hasn't been figured out. It's coming from Gates. Malaria is in the long run. We want to do the same thing we've been doing with polio, which is eradicated regionally and then eradicated all over the world. So both the Foundation and Breakthrough Energy are excited the things we can do together. Mr. Gates travelled to Lizard Island. Well, of course, he's a lizard. On the Great Barrier Reef before arriving in Sydney, and he said he loved travelling in Australia. He is planning to head to Melbourne to watch the last 5 days of the Australian Open. That would have been probably the main reason he came to Australia, people. It says, travelling with Mr. Gates is representatives from his foundation and the Breakthrough Energy, which drives innovation in sustainable energy and technology to reduce greenhouse gases. How about hot air from Elitus? Can they get rid of that? Now, the next link is Gates talking with Albanese. It's ridiculous. And then you got the Minister for Energy, Chris Bowen, coming on to tell you that wholesale prices for electricity have dropped all around Australia. And then you got the opposition energy minister saying, but it hasn't been passed on to the consumers yet. And it still hasn't been. So you can basically see that there's a massive, massive con, and Gates is just going to get his way. In fact, here is the latest story that I can find on electricity bills in Australia. abc.net.au. Electricity bills set to rise as Australian energy regulator sets new network transmission costs, 30th of April 2024. So it's got Australians hoping for energy bill relief next financial year have been delivered a blow, with the cost of energy transmission set to rise in different parts of the country. A decision by the Australian Energy Regulator will see the amount charged by 6 electricity distributors rise over the next 5 years. In New South Wales, customers reliant on distributors Ausgrid and Endeavour Energy, Essential Energy will pay between $14 and $39 more, while customers of the ACT company Evo Energy will pay $18 a year more. It says Tasmanian households will pay on average $56 more a year, with small businesses to pay $80 more on average. This is just terrible, people. They're liars. The biggest hike is in the Northern Territory, where transmission costs charged by the Power and Water Corporation will rise by $116 a year for the average household. And it says, while small businesses in the NT will pay $32 a year more. I'm not going to read the rest. That's the latest update. So now you can see that guy is a bald-faced liar. Okay? And that's what's happened. So this is what they say. They say it and it doesn't happen. Okay? So don't believe it. When the lips are moving from politicians, guess what? They're lying. That's why I call it the Liberal Party, people. Labor and Liberal, red team, blue team. Doesn't mean anything. It's the same team. And it's been ruled by these oligarchs and elitists for decades. Okay? Long time. Way back when the Gough Whitlam's Labor government opened the door to Red China, it started. Okay, it was already happening before that, but that was the real okay. Let's roll out the red carpet. They've never looked back. Okay, so we're in a pickle, and we've let all this happen to us. We've let the Morrison government roll our sleeves up for the pandemic COVID shots, which we now know are very, very dangerous. And actually, I'll talk about that after this. But and you'll be pretty shocked by what I got to say. Anyway. Now, I was going to play the clip with Gates talking to Albanese, but I don't see the point. I mean, it's a big setup thing. You can see that they're just nodding at each other. It's no big deal. It's just a very obvious knee bending to the elitist lord. So I don't really want to play it. I don't want to hear that guy lying about bills are going down. Actually, no. Okay, let's play it. Let's play it. And this is what the Labor government said. We're talking more than a year ago. Okay. And it was on Channel 7 News. So let's just take it with a grain of salt. But yes, I will play it because you do need to hear and remember what they say in the past and then fast forward to now and then hold them accountable. Seriously.
A meeting of the rich and powerful.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Anthony Albanese opens his door to billionaire Microsoft founder Bill Gates.
We haven't met before, but I've admired your work.
Particularly his efforts tackling global health. Mr. Gates now holds a keen interest in treating diseases across the Pacific.
You know, with malaria in the long run, we want to do the same thing we're doing with polio, which is eradicate it regionally and then eradicate it all over the world.
The Prime Minister warns we need to prepare for future challenges in health, but also climate change.
My government was elected on a platform of taking climate change seriously.
Both the Foundation and Breakthrough Energy are excited about the things we can do together.
Like investment in cleaner energy, but the immediate challenge is rising power bills.
The bills are going to be high for Australians. Oh, yeah. We're already seeing that.
Energy Minister Chris Bowen claims we're about to see some relief, releasing new Treasury analysis showing that since the introduction of price caps on gas and coal, wholesale prices have fallen 44% in Queensland, 38% in New South Wales, 32% in South Australia and 29% in Victoria, which according to this data means power bills will be $230 lower than they otherwise would have been next year.
We welcome the impact of this intervention, and we know that Australians realise there is more yet to be done.
The opposition isn't buying it.
Those higher wholesale prices haven't been passed through to consumers yet.
The federal government acknowledges it'll take time for the price caps to flow through to the market, but insists its plan is working.
When you've got power prices up right around the world, no intervention is going to act immediately.
Jennifer Beshwati, 7 News.
There you go, people. I thought I'd let it roll. And then, as I said, you go fast forward to now, the price is about to go up. So I'm just telling you, people, watch, you know, keep your ear on the ground because we're in a recession now. They're not going to tell you it is. In fact, I'll go and have a look at the gold and we'll have a look at the bankruptcies. And I bet you they still haven't fixed the bankruptcies. I bet you it's still just lingering at some fictitious level because they're too frightened to let you know that business confidence has virtually vanished. And this is the reason it's going to happen, because business is the first to know that there's going to be problems and people start bailing. That's what happens. So bankruptcies start occurring really quickly. And that causes job loss, which then means the unemployment rate rises and people start to see something going on and they stop spending, okay? And that's what causes the whole thing. Okay, so let's go and have a look. I'm just going to go to conspiracyoz.com like you should, and I'm just going to check the gold first and then we'll look at the bankruptcy. So on the right hand side of the widget bar of conspiracyoz.com, I'm going to the gold chart, which is abcbullion.com.au. I changed the AU dollar sign to US so I can see what the Australian dollar is worth US, and then I zero in on the latest graph. So I'm looking at it now and I'll see what date it's on. So it's going to the 5th of the 5th, which is actually up to date. And it says the price of gold is $2,312. So it has come down slightly from the 400, but it's still hovering way in the wrong area. Now let's go and have a look at the bankruptcies. This is the one I'm most keen about. Last time I looked, it was still dodgy. It's still dodgy. Okay, so they've still got February as 968 major companies going under in Australia just in that month. Then all of a sudden you see it drop down to 595 595 companies in March, and that is not correct. And the January one's even worse with 555 companies. They will fix it. Come the April adjustment, you'll see this, people. So as soon as they get round to it, which will be pretty soon, they'll adjust it. But I did notice something on that list. If you go to the tradingeconomics.com site, if you scroll down past that link I've got in conspiracyhours.com on that widget, and just look below it, and you'll see related subjects to that graph. And they've got things like, obviously, the bankruptcies are showing that there. In other words, related, last bankruptcy limit, and then the previous one, and then it says it's a company and it's March. Then it's got things like building capital expenditure, and it's got 1.50 was the last one, and the previous one before that was 0.10, and this is a percent, and that's December 2023. So the point I'm making, they are not looking at building capital expenditure up to date. The last one they looked at was in December 2023. Then they've got National Australia Bank business confidence, and it's got 1% was the last one, but the previous one was flat, zero. And that was March 2024. Okay, so that's a bank's business confidence. Then you've got, and I'm just going to go through it. I don't want to read them all because it's actually quite a bit on here, quite a lot. I'm just going to look at, see if I can find some banks or other things like that. But it's a really good thing to look at. Then you got small business sentiment, okay? And the month before last, it was minus 9%, and now it's down to minus 4% points. That was back in December 2023, and they are not updating stuff, people. They are trying to stop you looking at stuff because they don't want you to realize we're in a recession. We're in the recession. Okay, they're not going to tell you that. So business confidence here, and I'm just going to see if I can find one to do with it. And I don't think it's going to have it. This one's interesting. It says mining production, because mining production is what makes this country work. That's what we're all about. We're all about the mining. And it says it was the last reading was minus 0.70. And then the recent one was 0.10%. And that was December 2023. They're not going to talk about it, people. The manufacturing production was at 0.80% in December 2023, and it's now flatlined at 0.00%. So this is interesting stuff to read, but again, you've got to take it with a grain of salt. They don't even update the actual bankruptcies. I'm going to have a look at the forecast. This is interesting too, because it probably still says the same forecast from when I read it months and months and months ago. In other words, they're not going to change it. It's got bankruptcies in Australia is expected to be at 690 companies by the end of this quarter. That's 968, actually. According to Trading Economics Global Macro Models and Analysis Expectations in the long term. It says the Australian bankruptcy is projected to trend around 590 companies in 2025, and then they're trying to lower it to 550 companies in 2026, according to our econometric models. Now, sorry, completely and utterly bogus. Then you go to the linear chart. This is maximum. We're talking for 25 years, and you can actually see that since the global pandemic, it has been on an absolute vertical trajectory. More so than the whole of history since 1999, which is a slow climb until it got to the global financial crisis and it went through the roof with bankruptcies. And it never really recovered, people. All the way through to 2015-16, it never really recovered the bankruptcies. Then it started to flatline a little bit from 2014-19. And then, of course, when the pandemic hit, it dropped to nearly zero simply because companies were being reimbursed by governments to keep their employees in the LGAs, the local government areas, and to finance them if they were out of pocket. And of course, now the trajectory for bankruptcies is going through the roof, and then keeps growing and growing, and it will not come down because we're in the recession. It's going to keep going all the way till it gets there, which of course is when the globalists step in, like the phoenix rising from the ashes, and gives you the Hegelian dialectic, which is the problem, which is, of course, everyone's losing their jobs, and then the problem and then the reaction, help us, and the solution will be, and it probably will be, a universal basic income. So it's similar to a really low income, like you got in the pandemic when you couldn't go to work and you'll barely be able to survive. And that's when they have us. When you're on that limit and you've sold all your assets off and you don't own a house or a car anymore and you exist in their system, you're done. And people will be chorusing, oh, thank you, Mr. Gates. Thank you, Mr. Musk. Thank you, Mr. Bezos. Thank you for saving us. And boy, will they have a belly laugh. Now, reading on, there's a few more links to this story. I wanted to get off this subject quick because I'm almost at the hour and 20-minute mark. It says, Bill Gates' nuclear venture hits a snag amid US restrictions on China deals. Now, this is what I was telling you about with Gates. These people are dealing with China, okay? We're not talking about the American people or even the political system. We're talking about these private corporations like Microsoft and all these things that Gates does are trying to sell things to them. Okay, so here we go. This is news.yahoo.com, 2nd of January, and look at the date, 2019, just prior to the pandemic, people. Bill Gates, and this is from the original story, it looks like it came from Reuters. So anyway, Bill Gates' nuclear venture hits a snag amid US restrictions on China deals. It says New York, Reuters it was. TerraPower LLC, a nuclear energy venture chaired by Microsoft Corp. co-founder Bill Gates, is seeking a new partner for early stage trials of its technology after new US rules forced it to abandon an agreement with China, company officials told the Wall Street Journal. So if he ends up teaming up with China, which he probably will, they're the reactors that are going to come to Australia. I'm not going to say self-exploding ones, but they're the ones that will come to Australia eventually. So it says TerraPower reached an agreement with state-owned China National Nuclear Corp in 2017 to build an experimental nuclear reactor south of Beijing. But Gates wrote in an essay published late last week that TerraPower is unlikely to follow through of its plans in the face of new restrictions on technology deals with China. Now, let me just think, people. 2017. Who was the US president at that time? You guessed it. That's why they hate Trump, because he stopped things like this. The Bellevue, Washington-based company is now unsure which country it will work with to conduct trials of its technology, which is designed to use depleted uranium as fuel for nuclear reactors in a bid to improve safety and costs, company officials told the Journal. Well, boo-hoo, Bill. We're regrouping, Chief Executive Chris Levescu told the Journal in an interview. Maybe we can find another partner. The US Department of Energy in October announced new restrictions on nuclear deals with China, in keeping with a broader plan by the Trump administration, there it is, to limit China's ability to access US-made technologies it considers to be of strategic importance. Now, there is a fellow I'm going to probably talk about if I've got time on the podcast, and it'll be a link to a YouTube thing you need to go and watch. It's just an American farmer in Mississippi around that area that has got massive knowledge on what Gates and his mates are doing to do with the water supply and the food supply in that area where Gates owns most of the farmland. It's a really important thing to hear, but he talks about how we may be in, because he's a prepper as well. He's talking about how, and I think they're called the MACs, M-A-C-S. If you want to look it up now. And he talks about the American government selling F-16 fighter jets to the countries, the NATO countries or countries around Ukraine and Russia. And Putin and the Russian government have said that that means war. That's what they're saying. It's a massive escalation, because what it means is that they're sending fighter jets that actually could damage Russian infrastructure and shoot down their planes. These are not average fighter jets. So what the US does is sells them to these countries around Ukraine, and then the countries sell them to Ukraine. And now what this farmer is saying, and it's to do with what Trump said about the technologies, if any of these fighter jets are shot down or any of the technologies involved with all these things is captured, the Russians will gain a foothold into American intelligence. That's what they're most worried about. And there's lots of, apparently Putin boasts all the time that they've captured foreign tanks and machinery and all sorts of stuff to deal with this war on Ukraine, and they're using it. They're finding this stuff and then obviously selling it, probably, or giving it to the Chinese and North Koreans. This is very, very dangerous. I can't verify that, but you can see that their allies, all those countries, including Iran, and this is pushing and precedence towards a third world war with nuclear weapons, because Putin said he will use them if NATO builds up around Ukraine, and that is exactly what they want to do. And I'll, if I've got time, I'll talk about that too, because that's a really important subject as well, because it involves Australia, because we just gave $100 million to Ukraine. So you can see what side of the fence we're on, okay? Now, anyway, finish up this story here before I get segued into all these other different ones. To finish up that Gates on TerraPower, it says, Gates, who founded TerraPower, said in his essay that regulations in the United States are currently too restrictive to allow the reactor prototype to be built domestically. Okay, so costly. That's Gates for you, people. Anyway, now that Trump's gone, you can see that he's probably gone in. That's why he's hawking around the world looking for someone to help buy his TerraPower small modular reactors, which haven't really been built yet. So you can see that he's still in the early stages, but thumbs up. Now, in November, if Trump wins, I'm telling you, people, they will assassinate him. They will not let him win. Okay, so these are strange times indeed. I hope my predictions are completely wrong and don't go anywhere near those sort of problems, because it means the whole of the West, and I do mean Australia too, is going to be destabilized. Okay, and globalists want this, people. They want the West to collapse. Okay, now you get it. Okay, now you get it. Now, I have tacked some other links on to the story that you may not be aware of, that they're connected to the same story, but they were done earlier. So these are stories from previous subjects that were the same, and I've just linked them together in the one story. So you don't searching all over the place for different stories. It all comes under a sort of headlines, and that's only because I haven't put the stories up, so they're all rolling into each other. This is what's happening now, but that's the way it is for the moment. It says, abc.net.au, 26th of February 2024, Andrew Forrest slams the fossil fuel industry and the coalition for nuclear energy bulldust. And Andrew Forrest is the big head honch at Fortescue Metals, so he's a big mining magnate. Mining and renewable energy magnate, oh, there it is, Andrew Twiggy Forrest, has used a National Press Club address to accuse the National Party of betraying the bush by supporting nuclear energy over renewables. The federal coalition made up of the Liberal and National parties are currently planning to take a pro-nuclear energy platform to the next federal election. We need to have a mature conversation about nuclear, Liberal leader Peter Dutton said earlier this month. It's the latest technology that has zero emissions, and it can firm up renewables in the system. So you can see why he's doing it. He wants to politically win and say they've reached zero emissions by building nuclear reactors. This is what Dutton wants, and this country's going to hell in the handbasket, people. It says, in a one-on-one interview with the business after his press club address, Andrew Forrest had a message for the coalition. I'd say to all my friends in the Liberal National Party, no one owns this space. It's the right space. So let's get after renewable energy, he said, reflecting that Labor currently had the high ground on the energy transition. There is no choice here. Green energy is the lowest cost of energy into every Australian household. It's going to happen anyway. Really? Green energy will not destroy the environment. See, this is a guy that is a mining magnate. He rips the ground up for a living. And now suddenly he's wearing a different hat. I think it's still in the Kubra, and I think he bought them too. But the fact is, you can't believe what you hear. Remember, this guy wants renewables because he wants us to fail. That's the point. As much as he touting he wants to save all the Australian households, in the long run, he's just another globalist minion in the circle of elitists that get their marching orders all the time. So he says, reading on, fossil fuels will continue to be unreliable, expensive, be used as a weapon, and cost more to every Australian household, so we know what's going to happen. What? Used as a weapon? Can we just stop all the bickering and politicking and get on with it? Yeah, just get on with it, eh, Andrew? Mr. Forrest backed the recent proposal by economists Ross Garnett and Rod Sims, also revealed in a speech at the National Press Club, to introduce a carbon solutions levy on fossil fuel extraction within Australia and all fossil fuel imports. I'd like that guy to line up and give us a list over the last 10 years of everywhere he flew and everything he needed for his mining companies to use fossil fuel, and then hand him the bill. That's what I like to do. So it says what he said. He said the alternatives would be for Australian businesses and consumers to pay their carbon taxes to overseas governments or face losing key export markets. At the end of the day, I've heard that so many times, people, the question for Australians is not if or why to price carbon, it's whether or not we allow the price to be set by Australia, by Australians, to the profit of Australians, or by global markets. It's already set by global markets. That's why Bill Gates is telling him what to do. It's going to happen regardless. You can't deny it. It's happening now. It says in 2026, the EU will impose a carbon border tax on products. Major export markets of Australia, including Australian products made from using fossil fuel, a tax on the carbon they emit or contain. This is unbelievable. Can you see how they're going to destroy the West people? A carbon tax will utterly destroy it. And everyone will be rushing to the end to get the renewables, and it won't work. It's a massive orchestrated collapse, okay? In the middle of a recession and two wars. Perfect timing for the globalists. I'll just finish up that story with this. This is a classic, people. It says, fielding questions from reporters after his press club address, Mr. Forrest said nuclear energy, wait for people, was being used as a Trojan horse by the fossil fuel producers to keep oil, gas and coal in the energy mix for longer. No, I think they're closing down the last of our coal-fired power stations, so I don't see how nuclear energy is an excuse to keep that going, when Dutton has already said he wants to build the reactors on the coal-fired power station sites. So I don't. That argument is defunct. And he says to finish up, the main thing, the green electricity and green energy industry needs, ladies and gentlemen, is for the fossil fuel sector to stop lobbying governments to stand in the road. Fortescue's executive chairman responded, if you think that nuclear came out of nowhere, no, it didn't. It's been pushed by the fossil fuel sector as a great way to delay the whole country for 20 years from switching over to clean energy. Now, that's absolutely rubbish, because the coalition wanted nuclear energy way back with John Howard and had nothing to do with fossil fuel. It was to do with wanting nuclear energy and not getting it because the public didn't want it. That's the difference here. If suddenly the public wants it, why? Because there's a great big hole called an energy hole where people need to keep the lights on. Okay? So this guy touting his windmills and his solar panels is ridiculous. He would be driving around in the fossil fuel car, flying in fossil fuel planes, and he wouldn't give a damn because you don't follow him. Okay? These are the very people that will live like the wild man and stay like that and make you conform. That's the problem here, people. Same with Gates. He's the same. They're all the same. So check out the other links. I didn't want to get into them all. There's an Andrew Forrest Wikipedia. Go and read that and see what there. Then you've got Andrew Forrest, Australian mining businessman. Read about the guy. Okay? Then you've got another link, renewable energy projects, acceleration by the Victorian government draws a fury of farmers. You've got experts call for increased monitoring and reduction of carbon emissions on major infrastructure projects. These are all the things coming, people. Then finally, I put in this one that seems a bit off-centre, but very relevant. Vladimir Putin warns the West of the risk of nuclear war, says Moscow can strike any Western targets. So this is where the danger is, people, when you push nuclear war and you promote nuclear power, you're entering an age where we cannot come back. The more we do it, the less chance of survival. Okay, so that came out abc.net.au, 29th of February 2024. It says President Vladimir Putin has told Western countries they risk provoking a nuclear war if they sent troops to fight in Ukraine, warning that Moscow had the weapons to strike targets in the West. The war in Ukraine has triggered the worst crisis in Moscow's relations with the West since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. Okay? That was it. Mr. Putin has previously spoken of the dangers of a direct confrontation with NATO and between NATO and Russia, but his nuclear warning on Thursday was one of his most explicit. So that's it. Not reading any more on it. You can go and check it out. That's how dangerous the whole nuclear thing is, people. Even though they say, oh, no, it's safe, it's great. Just go and watch The Simpsons. Homer Simpson knows how to run a nuclear power plant. If he can do it, you can do it. Yeah, whatever. Now, I have done the story on the waste, the nuclear waste too, so I will get that story up too, and that'll follow that one. So you can sort of do that story, then read on about the nuclear waste when I get that story up, because that's the after effect of what happens, okay? Now, I wanted to really quickly touch on, I'm not going to get right into the Farmergate, so I was going to do it, but I'm running out of time, so there's other stories I need to cover first. But there'll be a whole bunch of stories that I'll be putting up. But the particular site I want you to go to, just to hear what this particular fella has to say about Gates and that. I'll see if I can get the YouTube clip up now, and I'll just stop it before it starts, because we know that the YouTube likes to roll it, and it's not starting good. So it says, the real reason Bill Gates is buying farmland, this should worry you. And it's from the Max. They've got only 282,000 subscribers. And this is about 5 months ago, the story. But you do need to have a listen to this. This guy is just a farmer. He's telling you to grow your own food. Okay? And he tells you why. But he's talking about Gates. And this is very interesting coming from just a, you know, an average Joe just in the down in the southern parts of the US to tell you. Now, he gets in a bit of the Bible bashing too, which I don't really like, but it's because of where they are. They're in the Bible Belt, so that's fair enough. But what he says about Gates is actually on the ball. So that link will go up. And he's got another one too, and I'll just see if I can go to that. And it's, if you go to the actual site, you'll see all the latest ones, and that's what it is. But what he says is very, very true. And I was so switched on, and I found it accidentally. I wasn't looking for it. I was doing a looking for Gates and stories on Gates. And I saw this fellow and I thought, I'll have a listen to it. And it just made a lot of sense. And I thought, wow, people really are starting to be very, very switched on now, even in the US. But the most important message I'm thinking that he's got isn't about pointing fingers. It's about telling you to try and be, to try and look in your own backyard and grow something, just something that people can share, so we're not going to Coles, Woolies and Aldi's and all these places to sustain our life force. Because once they close those doors, and it can happen, people, once all the cash is gone and everything's on the app on your phone, the phone goes down or the FPOS or even the actual supermarkets themselves, you'll virtually starve to death. That's the sort of power they'll have over you. Think about that just for a few minutes. Then go and watch that clip. Now, the second clip is important too, because it was done 2 days ago, but it's about today's date. Okay, it says warning declared. Why is everyone worried about May the 5th? And this is his personal opinion. And I think it's a really, I think his name's Cody, the guy. I think it's a really good opinion piece, because he talks about something that should be completely unrelated to a farmer down near Mississippi, completely, but it's not. He actually talks about the F-16 fighter jets and American technology and how it's happened before. Go and have a listen to it, people. This guy is actually pretty good. I'm going to start listening to him more simply because he gives me a US perspective in the South where a lot of land has been bought by Bill Gates. So I need to know what the hell's going on. And this farmer is going to tell you because he's right in the middle of it. Okay? So this is a very interesting sort of angle to get from something. And I'll be watching him more, and he's a prepper too. So he's got advice. Now, of course, he's a YouTuber, and eventually Google will kick him off. That's what will happen if he says anything too discreet, and he's on the ball with what he says. So eventually that may happen, but still, it's a survival prepper site. That's what it really is. But he's just a farmer, and he's not a huge farmer. But still, it's good to listen to this opinion piece. I think there's some Australian farmers should do the same thing as this guy. Anyway. And some of the headlines I've got with that Gates buying up land, you've got author accuses Gates of buying up land and threatening small farmers under guise of saving the planet. You heard that before. Then you've got Bill Gates buying up land, threatening small farms under the, God, it was the same story, yeah. Bill Gates finally explains why he's buying up so much US farmland. You got to watch that TV. It was such a yeah, Bill, right. Then you got Bill Gates invests in Perth startup, slashing cow farts in Aussie first. there's a title. Then you've got how the financialization of water threatens water supply. And that's to do with Gates as well, how he buys up water. Then you've got innovating till the cows come home. Bill Gates visits Australian ranch to witness digital agriculture. You'll love that. Digital agriculture. Then you've got why Bill Gates is investing million in the Darling Downs. So that's in Australia too. So he's not just in the US, people. He's everywhere. Okay? Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Moving on. Now, I want you to check out the sugarcane story too, people. This is a big deal too. I put up the title, Sugarcane, Put It In Your Car and Then Put It In Your Mouth. You're going, what? I've got Australia, the land of milk and sugar? So it's got scientific breakthrough on complicated sugarcane genome keeps biofuel dream alive. Now, we know all about that. We know they use it in ethanol. So that's what that story's about. 9th of April, 2024, abc.net.au. And it says, I'll just light up the red part because we really already know about that industry anyway. It says sugarcane was brought to Australia on the first fleet in 1788. Did you know that, people? And until now, it's been grown to produce raw sugar. But the crop is incredibly versatile and can be used to make biofuels, bioplastics, perfume, and even sustainable fabrics. Then you move on and it says, sugarcane is the last of the world's 20 major crops to have genome mapping done. And it's got the principal investigator and the CSIRO research scientist Karen Aitken spearheaded the research, securing funding through its US Department of Energy by proving that research communities around the world would benefit from accessing the genome sequence. Because what they're doing now, people, they're not just going to use it for biofuels. It says Brazil is the largest sugar producer in the world and the large proportion of their crop is used to produce ethanol to fuel the nation's vehicles. Now, remember, they want to get rid of that because they want electric cars. So it's not going to be something that is going to last, but they want it to. Now, if you go to the next story, now that's a long story. But then it goes into another story that's like, what? And it says here, it's got sugarcane milk may soon be an alternative to dairy with startups vying for the market share. Now, I've talked about this before, but this, I had to put it with the biofuels. And it's got abc.net.au, 5th of September, wait for it, 2023. It's been around. And it says, consumers looking for plant-based options to dairy milk have an abundance of choice available from oat, not really milk, almond, not milk, soy, not milk, and rice, not milk, to even macadamia milk, not milk. But a product geared to taste almost exactly like dairy milk, still not milk, that would be shelf stable for up to 3 years, could soon hit the market. It's milk made from sugarcane. So what is it? University of Queensland, where else, people? Professor, that's the one that Gates funds. Professor of Food Microbiology, Mark Turner, explained that the sugar from cane, molasses and other byproducts would be consumed by yeast, which would turn and produce a protein bio-identical to dairy milk. I'm not going to read any more, but would you drink it, people? It's not from a cow, but this is why they're doing it, because they want to get rid of cows. They don't want you eating any meat or cheese or milk. They want you to buy Bill Gates's Beyond Meat, his lab-grown meats, and all the other stuff that they're going to feed you, as well as the insects, because that's what you need. And, of course, they all invest in the hospital, so once you get sick, it's a bit of a gravy train, people. Slow death, but until the hammer comes down and they get their cull, they'll be enjoying the slow demise of the human population. And as one work colleague said to me, who's now a carnivore, it's a new diet, carnivore diet, just meat, that's it. He said that we have had the best food available in the past, but now we're apparently the most fed. So it's not the best food, it's just the most fed people on the planet, but we're the sickest we've ever been. And that is a pretty big statement. And when you think about the amount of people going to doctors, the amount of people needing prescriptions, it's gone through the roof. I see it all around me all the time. People constantly sick, going to the doctors, getting prescriptions. It's sort of normal. It's a gravy train the doctors are used to. They can't write the prescriptions quick enough or their bills because they can't keep up. Medical centre's a bit like a big churning out building to churn out the sick people to send them straight to the chemist to get their prescriptions and off to the surgeries to get things cut off. And you wonder what started that. And just to finish up on that story, it's got President of the Cane Growers Mackays, Kevin Borg, said the cane industry was in the box seat for this new technology and he saw a strong appetite from consumers. Because, you know, they've all been trained. You got to have sugar, even though they actually get told you shouldn't have sugar, but they're going to drink it in milk because they're being told it's good for the environment. He says, in the past, there's been no government support in place. I wonder why. But today, we've got a government that's hell-bent on introducing these projects, he said. So remember when I was going to school, people, I don't know about you people out there because I'm a bit older, but I remember at school, we always had a little tiny bottle of milk that was given to us before we started our classes. And it actually had the cream on the top. And you drank it and thought, that was great, put it back in the crate, off the crate went. That was a standard procedure in a school back in, you know, back in the 70s. So I'm just saying, people, how times have changed. Anyway, now put some links up to finish up that article at conspiracyhealth.com, and down the bottom it's got links like The Cowless Path, and that was a story I put up a while back. Then you've got sugarcane milk may offer some protein, taste as dairy, future alternative. That's a link. Then you've got game-changing, sugarcane milk is on the horizon. Plant milks or dairy, what's better for you and the planet Earth? CNN, well, you know what they're going to say at CNN. Then you've got another one, move over milk. Alternative dairy industry continues to cream the competition. Those headlines, people. That's why I put them up. They're so ridiculous, but they're funny. Go and check it out. Now, one of the fellows at work put me in touch with this article from the Epoch Times because he subscribes to it. I don't, so I can't get the articles. But I see the headlines for the articles, and then he gives me the story so I can talk about them on the podcast. So I did the story last week where I was talking about Dr. John Campbell, and this is to do with COVID. And that was one that was called The Longest Facts. but this one's different. This is the one called The Key Ingredients in the mRNA COVID Shots, and this is from AIDS Cancer Development. This is a new study. Now, this is very, very interesting stuff, people, because this is where the cat is out of the bag, and they're opening the door now, and people are starting to ask questions from the side of the fence that was blocking it in the initial days, which is the medical side. They're now coming out of the woodwork because they realise now that they've been had. And people don't like having the wool pulled over them. They just don't. Some people will just shy it away and say, oh, well, you know. But then there are other people that go, hang on a minute. And Dr. John Campbell is one of those people. That's why I check out all his videos all the time, and so should you. He's right on the ball. Anyway, this is by Joe Wang on the 29th of April, 2024. And it says, the role that a key ingredient in the COVID-19 mRNA vaccine plays in cancer development has been analysed in a comprehensive review newly published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal. The conclusion, the specific form of this ingredient, and it's called, I've got to get this word right, pseudouridine, that could be it, pseudouridine, that Pfizer and Moderna used to make their vaccines aids cancer development. I'll say that slowly. That's Pfizer and Moderna use this ingredient that aids cancer development. That's the claim. In this, and it says it, a peer-reviewed scientific journal. N1 menthol pseudo, here we go, that's that root again. I might just say it and you can work it out yourself. So pseudouridine, I think that's it. And he actually, you know what he says? He says, I will call it pseudo-U. I'm going to do the same. Well done. It says, is a critical component of the mRNA vaccine. Pfizer and Moderna chemically introduce pseudo-U, this is very good, into their vaccines to make the mRNA molecules last longer in the human body, escaping degradation by enzymes, and to avoid suppression by the innate, I like the word innate, immune system, the body's first line of defense against foreign invaders. It says a study titled Review N1 Menthol Pseudouridine, Friend or Foe of Cancer, is authored by five scientists from Mexico, the UK, Canada, the United States, and Saudi Arabia, and was published in May 2024. So it just came out, people. Issue of the International Journal of Biological Macromolecules. It says pseudo-U aids cancer development. Do I need to make that clearer, people? Messenger RNA is a single-stranded molecule made up of four types of nucleotides, or nucleotides, I think it is, A, C, G, and U. In their vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna replace all the U nucleotides with pseudo-U. Now, do you get it, people? A chemically modified version. The invention was praised by many in the field. However, since pseudo-U is not native to the human body, is it safe? For their study, the five scientists analyzed data in an article published in a peer-reviewed journal, Frontiers in Immunology, in October 2022, where a group of researchers in Thailand, using a melanoma mouse model, tested cancer development with mRNA vaccines. They found that all mRNA vaccines in which pseudo-U replaced the U stimulated cancer growth and metastasis spread of cancer cells. The higher the percentage of the pseudo-U, the more severe the cancer growth. Can you believe people that have had one, two, or three shots or more, people, the risks they're taking? And it says, according to a 2021 study titled The Critical Contribution of Pseudo-U, I'm going to call it that, to mRNA COVID-19 Vaccines, it says the body's immune system can recognize the U component of a foreign mRNA and trigger a cascade of immune responses. But substituting U with the pseudo-U removes that recognition and decreases innate immunogenicity, allowing cancer cells to grow uncontrollably. Now, it's got claims by Pfizer and Moderna. The review article concluded that Pfizer and Moderna emphasized only the positive aspects related to replacing the U with pseudo-U when launching their vaccines. The new design makes mRNA more stable, leading to more spike protein produced and a more desirable immune response against SARS-CoV-2. The vaccine makers did not, however, provide information on the potential harms of the S protein, which is a known toxin, or on the potential side effects of avoiding an innate immune response. This is just absolutely criminal, people, what they've done to people. It's like murdering them. And the author says, I, for one, felt misled. And the author says, when he first learned that Pfizer was developing an mRNA-based vaccine, his reaction was, oh, at least it's not going to do much harm, as mRNA normally lasts only a few minutes in the body. As a messenger, mRNA's job is to deliver the message of making a protein and then quickly disappear. The author's assumption was reinforced when the Centers for Disease and Control and Prevention claimed, after the body produces an immune response, it discards all of the vaccine ingredients, just as if it would discard any substance that cells no longer needed. Well, it turns out that the mRNA is not what the author thought. By replacing every U with a pseudo-U, Pfizer and Moderna designed their vaccines to stay in the body longer to produce the spike protein to trigger immune responses. The problem is that the modification made the molecules too stable, and thus they stay in the body for far too long. Some of the consequences of this is now beginning to emerge. Spike protein causes cancer. When we consider the possible harms from the COVID shot, we need to look at not only the components of the vaccine, i.e. the SARS-CoV-2 mRNA LMP molecules that have been injected into the human bodies, but also the recombinant spike protein that the mRNA encodes for. The author wrote a column recently on the findings of a Japanese study on cancer development resulting from the COVID vaccine, in which the author noted the additional harm caused by the spike protein. A 2022 study by Oscar Solis and colleagues found that when the SARS-CoV-2 S protein is mixed with each of about 9,000 human proteins, the spike protein binds well with human estrogen receptor alpha, the ER-alpha, which is the estrogen receptor. ER-alpha is an important regulator in the body's reproductive system. But when the cell carrying the vaccine molecules produces the spike protein as encoded by the mRNA, the spike protein then binds to the ER alpha, disrupting the cell's normal function and leading to cancer development. This is serious stuff, people. This is so serious. And I'm so sad because there are a lot of people around me that have been jabbed. I'm very, very angry. But the powers that be forced everyone to do this or they lose their jobs. They did this on purpose. All these COVID rats that have run from Oz will be named and shamed. I have all the links ready to go up. And we will never forget these rats that did this to us. Okay? It says the mRNA vaccine is also found to weaken human cancer immunosurveillance, allowing easy growth of cancers. As further proof, we now have the new review of the N1 menthyl pseudouridine showing that pseudo-U contains mRNA vaccines that foster cancer development. So it's got, which is smarter, science or our innate immunity? National Institutes of Health scientists Dr. Jordan Mayer and Dr. Kelly Nance have praised the invention of the COVID-19 vaccine using pseudo-U. The modified nuclear base helps cloak the mRNA vaccines from the immune system, limiting their undesired immune stimulation, and in circumstances may also enhance the synthesis of antigens by the protein-producing machinery of the cell. They concluded in a 2021 paper, this allows these vaccines to tap into the natural process of the mRNA translation without triggering harmful side effects such as anaphylaxis. And it says, the author, I wonder if Drs. Meyer and Nance would draw the same conclusion today, given that so much information is emerging on the harms of the mRNA vaccine, especially when it comes to replacing the U with the pseudo-U in the mRNA molecules. It says the human body is a near-perfect design with a comprehensive immune system that protects it from harm while keeping a balance of things within the body's environment. Weakening the immune system for short-term gain is dangerous and almost certain to have long-term adverse effects. Replacing the U with the pseudo-U may successfully protect mRNA vaccines from the recipient's own immune system, like a Trojan horse, is what I've always called it. However, this Trojan horse may eventually release hostile forces that could kill the host. The undesired immune stimulation from the N1H scientists and the mRNA vaccine's perspective is exactly what the body needs to protect itself. But the immune system can't attack the invader because it's been suppressed by the pseudo-U. So you can see what's happening, people. When treating a terminally ill patient, the doctor may endeavour to achieve the desired immune response to ensure survival at all costs, regardless of the side effects. However, the approach should not be used when healthy people are the subject. That is so, so true. Everyone lined up to get jabbed, people. 80% of Australians. It says modern science is not yet advanced enough to fully understand the human immune system. for scientists to make desired versus undesired immune response decisions for hundreds of millions of healthy people via the jab is irresponsible and arrogant, to say the least. And the author says he is hopeful that top journalists such as The Lancet and Nature will soon follow their sister publications and accept research papers on the harms of the COVID shot. And it's becoming increasingly clear that the mRNA vaccine is not safe and it must be stopped. It says in his recent column, this is the author, he recommended the Springer Nature Group for allowing one of its medical journals, The Curious, to published the Japanese study on cancer deaths after the third COVID shot. Now the author would like to commend Elsevier, the Dutch academic publishing company that owns renowned journals like The Lancet and The Cell, for allowing its journal, International Journal of Biological Macromolecules, to publish the review article on pseudo-U and cancer. I thought the article, you couldn't beat it, Phil. To me, that signifies exactly what they meant to do. This is not an accident, okay? It is not an accident. I'll leave it at that. It sort of wraps up this week's podcast, but other stories that I will try and talk about next week, there's the case in Melbourne of a gigantic block of units that have been, all the people have been told to get out. The government's now going to boot them out, or whoever, the owners, so the owners can take over it and rebuild it. And I remember being in London back in 2017, and they had the Grenfell Tower. Remember the tower that went down, all the people that died? And that's still not been resolved. It's still sitting there and has not been resolved. But the British government took ownership of the building, and now it's called Crown Land. It's just unbelievable. So I just want to see what happens when all these terrible incidents happen where people are kicked out of their homes, and what the government actually plans to do with that land. I mean, this is what they're doing with the people in Lismore. I couldn't believe this when I saw this headline, people. Remember Lismore, that was all flooded out all of a sudden and all their land was given back and they all got sold out and bought out because they're going to build a smart city there in 2036, so they need to get rid of all the ferals. Guess what they're doing with them now to, you know, calm the nerves? Lismore to host, wait for it, clinical trial using MDMA, nature therapy, to treat disaster-induced post-traumatic stress syndrome. 3rd of May 2024, abc.net.au. I couldn't believe this. MDMA and nature-based therapy will be used in a groundbreaking clinical trial to assist people suffering natural disaster-related post-traumatic stress disorder in northern New South Wales, where they were suddenly flooded out, people. The federal government will spend $3.8 million on the trial involving around 200 survivors of the record-breaking floods that hit the region in 2022. Personally, I'd give the $3.8 million just to them so they can survive. I wouldn't be giving them drugs. But anyway, that's what they're going to do. Lead researcher, you should see this guy's face, James Bennett Levy from Lismore's Southern Cross University, said the use of MDMA-assisted therapy in a post-disaster context was a world first. Our aim with this project is that we can be leaders in climate-related mental health and well-being research. I can't believe this stuff. You know what MDMA is, people? Okay. MDMA is the active ingredient in the recreational drug ecstasy. I'm not going to read any more. But that's what happened to the poor people of Lismore, and it was hit the hardest because it was the anti-vax capital of Australia. They used a weather weapon. They made it to produce rain because they can do this, people, and they flooded them out. And they're doing it all around the world. These governments and corporations have this technology and they are using it. And they must be having a belly laugh because nobody gets it. Not yet anyway, but they will. It's only a matter of time. And they need to keep doing the weather weapons because it pushes the climate hoax. Oh, the weather's changing. It must be global warming and people breathing out and cows releasing methane. It has to be that. We need nuclear reactors because we can't use normal electricity anymore because it's damaging the planet, just like these weather events that are happening. See how they tie the whole circus together, people? Unbelievable, and people fall for it every time. Okay, people, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Sunday, the 5th of May, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.